creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
Today on Culture Click, we talk to Scott Simpson at the Winona History Center. Scott is a volunteer at the History Center, and one of the most recent exhibits he has worked on is called Brewing Up the Past. The exhibit deals with the long-standing history of brewing beer in Winona and the recent resurgence of local craft beers. Scott has a passion for both local history and local beer. I'm Bill Stoneberg with Scott Simpson on today's Culture Click. I'm here with Scott Simpson. He's a volunteer down at the Winona County Historical Society, and he helped with the Brewing Up the Past exhibit, which we're going to talk about today. How you doing, Scott?
So far, so good.
Okay, well, thanks for being on the show today. First of all, I just was wondering, how far back does Winona's brewing history go?
Well, it's actually interesting. They had a brewery before they even had a flour mill. So the Pickwick Mill went under construction between 56 and 58. In 1855, the first brewery opened here.
Oh, wow, so it's been a long history.
Yes, indeed.
Cool. What were some of the earliest kind of notable breweries that were in Winona?
Well, there's an interesting pattern to the breweries here, the pioneer breweries, in that they were almost entirely German immigrants. They were also very much a partnership type of owners. In other words, there was a constantly rotating cast of characters. You'd find somebody being a partner with somebody else, and then one of the partners sells out to somebody else, but all evolving to one sole proprietor. And almost always when that sole proprietor took control, they then changed the name of the beer to name it after themselves. So there you go.
That's interesting.
And the other common thread, which it, when you think about it, probably shouldn't have been too much of a surprise, was a catastrophic fire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, several of these breweries burned down.
And why is that?
Well, I think it was because fire prevention wasn't very good. They were wooden structures for the most part, and they were using fire within to roast and everything like that. So,
okay, so kind of a dangerous process.
It really was.
Yeah. Okay, what types of beers did they typically brew? Would it be comparable to today? Like, was it mostly lagers or other styles? Or?
Mostly lagers. In fact, the Boop's Brewery, and it was pronounced Boop. Peter Boop was from Bavaria, and so B-U-B, I read about, was pronounced B, like Betty Boop.
Okay.
And they evolved into German style, which was basically a lager.
Okay.
Lager, Pilsner, that's the styles, lighter type of brews. Of course, German style at some point in U.S. history didn't become a desirable trait, so they changed the name after that to Boop's Pils. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Would the process be much different than today? Like, would we notice a difference in the flavor, you think, or?
I don't think that much. There's a real interesting connection we've got here in how we actually, with the genesis for this exhibit, and that's of the last surviving member of the old Boop's Brew Crew. His name was Jerry Kulas. He worked there from 1955 to 1966. We met him a couple years back at the Island City Tap Room when those guys opened, and Andy and I both very big fans of craft beers. Surprisingly enough. And so the head brewer there told us there was a guy you guys need to meet. And one night one afternoon he was in there, and we started talking to him. And he died. Unfortunately, he passed away last March at age 86, but he was sharp as a tack. And we have a picture in our collection taken in 1962, the 100th anniversary of them moving the brewery to Sugarloaf. And there's 25, 30 guys in the picture. And Jerry pointed to each one of them, told us his name, his job in the brewery, and more often than not, a story about him. We dedicated this exhibit to Jerry's memory, and we're just so sorry that he didn't live to see it, because he would have been in his glory. But he did also have in that fantastic resource memory of his, he had done every job in the brewery, so he had the recipe for the Boops beer, and he then shared that information with the Island City gang. So if you go now to Island City and order their Pool 6 Pilsner, that's as close as you're going to get to the old Boobs brew.
Wow, that is really neat. So we can kind of get a taste of the past there.
Yeah, a real nice connection. Yeah.
Cool. That's very cool. How did you yourself get interested in this?
Well,
just an interest in beer?
I am old enough that I can remember before there was a time when there was even light beer. Not that I was particularly waiting for light beer, but the choices were lager, and the usual suspects. So when the craft beer renaissance began about 1970s, but okay. You know, it's been percolating along or brewing along. And so this was a natural. And when Island City opened, I'd been volunteering here for a while, and Andy and I, my curator, said, you know, we got to work something around Jerry, and this is it.
Wow. Yeah. That is really cool. It's a great tribute to him, man.
Yeah, we hope so. You know, we shared that with his family, and, you know, I attended at his memorial and told them what we were doing. Okay. So then, you know, they'd know that he's here, and we've got a picture of him that was actually in the Winona Post newspaper when we were just working on this, and we've got that on display with the dedication here.
So, cool.
Yeah, it's a nice thing.
Cool. And, you know, speaking of boobs, or boops, rather, it's hard because everyone says it the other way.
They did an article in the Winona Daily News about this, and one of the things that she thought was Tesla Mitchell, the reporter, thought was most interesting was that pronunciation. So yeah, but you know, I'm not going to correct anybody. I don't care I don't care if you drink light beer. I don't care if you pronounce. It's not me. I'm not in charge of anything.
You're not going to judge anyone based on their beer, huh?
No.
Okay. Well, anyway,
they do the same to me.
Right. Right. That's a good philosophy. And Boobs, I read, they survived Prohibition. How does a brewery survive Prohibition? How did that work?
There were, at the time that Prohibition went into effect, there were four operating breweries here in Winona. There had been there were five pioneers that we've really focused on. The first actually burned down in 1877, and it was at that point called Beck's Beer. It was out in Gilmore Valley, and C.C. Beck was the owner, the proprietor at that point of that brewery. And after the fire, he decided to take the insurance money rather than rebuild. So that left four that were operational at the time Prohibition, at the onset of Prohibition. Two of them, Parks and Ville, they decided it was just a fold. It wasn't worth it. And then actually the Park Brewery, we have a picture of them pouring beer down the sewer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Now,
that's kind of sad.
It is. should have been there with a straw.
Right.
The other two, Shell Operational, Boops and Shell Haas, both attempted to survive by doing soft drinks.
Okay.
And in the case of Boops, they did a thing called near beer. And near beer was what the Volstead Act was, what Prohibition was actually called, okay. What became Prohibition. And Andrew Volstead, by the way, was a Minnesota House of Representatives.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And he lent his name to this, and which became the only amendment to ever be repealed. Yeah, and so what they Battle Act allowed was for you to make beer up to 0.5%, up to 0.5%. Now, if you think about a session craft beer these days, or a lot of the beers, they're around 5%. So you can do the math and figure out the alcohol level was, you know, you weren't going to get drunk real fast. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's pretty interesting.
They did survive. But what actually got to them was the great post-World War II consolidation. And we have one of our plaques in this exhibit talks about how the five largest brewers at the end of World War II by 1980 had seen their market share go from 19% to over 75%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and those are Anheuser-Busch, Blatz, Pabst, Miller, and doesn't matter. Schlitz. That was okay. Those were the five. And of course, that consolidation went even further. And Boops went under, not because their beer sales were bad. They were actually doing well in bars on tap. People loved Boops beer, okay. But they couldn't compete with the huge advertising budgets that the big brewers had. And they couldn't compete in bottles and cans because they couldn't get the price point. See, so if Miller was going to be buying, 250,000 bottles, and Boops was going to order 2,000, they couldn't keep up, and of course the consolidation was closing breweries all over the country. So in 1969, Boops just decided they couldn't do it anymore.
Okay.
And Jerry actually saw the handwriting on the wall when he left in 1966. He was offered another job, and he'd seen just how difficult it had been for Boops to keep going.
Right.
Sad to say.
Wow, that's kind of sad. Speaking of the all the consolidation and stuff, you mentioned that Boops was really popular in the bars and stuff on tap. And was it mainly just a local thing then for Winona Breweries, or did they distribute outside of town? Or,
well, it kind of depended on the time frame.
Okay.
In other words, for example, right now there are more breweries operational in this country than any time in history. The peak year prior to the last couple was 1879. Wow. And what was happening back in that era, if you think about it, refrigeration isn't very good, transportation is limited, so little breweries were popping up all over the country. So a brewery like Boops might be transported, a ways away. But if you cross the river, Fountain City had their own brewery.
Okay.
And so it was, it was dependent on your transportation, your locality,
right.
And, what kind of competition there was.
Right.
Because, if you're taking things across the river, and of course, there also got to a point, particularly post-prohibition, where the licensing regulations were just incredible. Some states made you put on how much alcohol by content. Some wouldn't let you put on if you were local to that state. And all these bizarre rules. And interstate commerce gets involved too, which is why when the Island City Gang opened, they were actually delayed in their opening, not because they weren't ready to brew, but because they were, unlike New Glarus Brewery, which does Spotted Cow, they're only Wisconsin, so they didn't have to worry about interstate commerce. But Island City wanted to be able to cross the river with their stuff, and that caused a delay just to get the approval for that.
Okay. So in the early days, it's more of a transportation and refrigeration issue?
Yes.
Okay. So that's why there were so many then in town.
Exactly. And all over the country, And of course, then the big brewers started after that early flourishing. Then the big brewers decided, okay, we can buy this brew, much like they're doing now to a lot of the craft brewers. Oh. So if you, there are brewery, there's two responses, because the growth in the beer industry has been relatively flat, except for craft beer. Craft beer is where the growth is.
Right.
Well, the major brewers like Anheuser-Busch and what was Miller Coors, they weren't just going to let this happen. So they had two approaches. One, they would either buy up existing breweries. Like at one point, Miller Coors bought up Leinenkugel's. Oh, and another example would be Goose Island, which was an Illinois brewery that was bought up by Anheuser-Busch. Or the other approach they've taken is creating what they call crafty beers. In other words, Shock Top is a perfect example.
Okay.
When you look at the label, Shock Top, St. Louis, Missouri. St. Louis, Missouri. Oh, yeah, who else is in St. Louis, Missouri?
Wow.
That's another whole story. But and another one was Blue Moon from Colorado. Well, who else is in Colorado?
Right.
Of course. So they do not advertise the connection. So people go to the store and say, oh, they've got craft beer. I'm going home with some Shock Top.
Right.
Well, you're going home with some. Yeah. I mean, not demeaning the beer.
Sure.
I mean, some of it's, nice. It's drinkable.
Uh-huh.
But it's just not technically craft beer.
Actually, yeah.
And the other thing they've been doing is very quietly buying up real craft, not the major craft brewers that everybody knows about, like Goose Island or Leinenkugel's, but the little ones that, like there's a beer out of Washington State called the Legion. Well, it's just a local craft brewer. Now it's very quietly part of the Anheuser-Busch empire.
Oh, wow.
And another one is 10 Barrel Brewing out of Illinois. Same story. To give you an idea of the consolidation, there are over 400 brands under the, it's called AB Anheuser-Busch, InBev, InBev, and they have over 400 brands. They were competing, the biggest competitor for them was Miller Coors. In 2016, Anheuser-Busch InBev actually took over Miller.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, as if they weren't. I mean, they have. I think it's something like 60% of the world beer market.
Wow.
And when they took over Miller, Miller jettisoned Coors, and then now Coors is Molson Coors, and they're actually headquartered in Canada now. The other area of all this that a lot of people don't understand is how international, for example, AB InBev is. So, Labatt's, Canadian beer, yes? No?
Right.
No, AB InBev. Modelo, Mexican beer, yes? Nope, AB InBev.
Oh, wow.
St. Pauli girl, German, yeah? Nope, AB InBev. Foster's, Australian for beer, AB InBev. Yeah.
Wow. So they got a lot of control then. Oh, that's...
And the other thing that a lot of people didn't realize was that AB InBev and, at that point, Miller Coors weren't even American companies anymore.
Really?
AB InBev had rebased themselves in Belgium and Miller Coors in the United Kingdom.
Wow. So they're buying everything up, and not only that, we're losing our American beers too, huh?
Well, I think a lot of this was, the tax
okay.
breaks and all that,
sure.
that you could get, as all the other offshoring has happened for these corporations.
Okay, I feel like I've been fooled now with some of these beers like Foster's and stuff like that.
It's a brand new world. It really is.
Jeez. Well, back to the Winona history, was Winona like an especially good place to brew beer, or, is there something that made Winona special at all?
Well, As I usually tell folks when I start one of these talks, is that the five elements required for brewing: water, grain, hops, yeast, and German immigrants. We're all plentiful in the state of Minnesota, and regionally, with access to all the water here, this was not a bad place. But in that era, as we've already discussed, they're popping up all over. Yeah, so. Okay. It had all the elements. It certainly had the culture and climate for it, and the demand, as opposed to some other places. I mean, a lot of people are real surprised to find out how flourishing, for example, the Utah beer scene has become.
Really?
Yeah, there's some good craft brewers operating in Utah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I think that culture, given the Mormon.
Right, you wouldn't think so.
No, but, yeah.
That's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. And I suppose, like you said, the demand, and here in Winona, I suppose Winona had more demand than, say, across the river in Fountain City, just by population, or?
Well, no, I think by cultural proclivities.
Okay.
A lot of people came over from Germany or Europe in general, with a beer drinking tradition, because people think, Germany for beer, but Belgian beers, there are plenty of beer drinkers coming, and that is also the era of the great migrations from Europe. So those people are bringing their tastes over, and a lot of them settling in this region, and somebody supplies that need.
Okay. And then you mentioned the German immigrants. Why was it so important to have German immigrants as a factor?
I think they just had a real long tradition. And it's also, I think, the kind of thing where people would come here with the brewing skills.
Okay.
And they'd been brewers in Germany, say. And then they bring that with them here. And yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow. Cool. So you mentioned the water, so the river helped also, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was a good location. What was the biggest brewery that Winona ever had,
Well, Boops finally evolved to that. Over time, they pick up as the technology improves, in the case of Boops, they actually started in East Burns Valley.
Oh, wow.
And the originator, a guy named Jacob Weisbrod, he was actually the first person to start that brewery in East Burns Valley. By 1862, he had realized he needed more space, so he moved to Sugarloaf, which had the advantage not only of having more space, but it also had caves underneath Sugarloaf, which were ideal for aging beer.
Oh, wow.
So Jerry told us all about how that process was really, really helpful to them. And so that allowed them to grow. And of course, because they survived Prohibition, they were then in a good position to be the biggest brewer.
Right.
Okay, cool. So Winona kind of was special with the caves and the water.
Yeah. Okay. The region, actually, breweries up and down across the river, there was in Onalaska, right outside of La Crosse, they had a brewery, again, with caves. And Potosi, down in the western Wisconsin, there they had the same thing. In fact, in their old location there, where there was it was called Good Old Potosi. It was a brewery that went out of business, and their building was just completely falling apart. But then new craft brewers moved in there, and they have now that brewery, Potosi, was actually selected by the American Brewery Honor Association to be the National Beer Museum. And one of the things that Potosi makes is what they call their cave ale. And if you go through their museum there, they'll take you down to the opening for that cave and show you where they did their aging there as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Do they still do that then?
Yeah. Well, no, they don't actively. They don't actively do that now, but I mean they actively have what you kegs in there, but they're not, you know, it's all just for the museum show. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And you mentioned Boop's being up by Sugarloaf. Is that the big, that big building that's, I think it's an antique store or something now?
It's an antique mall, an antique mall. And if, and actually, two of the breweries are still physical presences in town. If you go down to Walnut Street to the Peerless Chain building, that is now owned actually by Bay State Milling now, but that building, that's the old Park Brewery, one of the ones that shut down during Prohibition. And yeah, you're right. Boop's Brewery is the antique mall. And if you look at the tallest part of that building, you will be able to see right up at the top near the, just below the eaves, you'll be able to see raised brick lettering spelling out B-U-B apostrophe S.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool. So there are some good remnants of our history here in town.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Cool. So was Boop's the most popular beer here in town, you think, or did it kind of change over time?
Well, I mean, I'm sure the majors made inroads, right. But, you know, certainly it's a local legend, you know.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is. So the consolidation, is that mainly what made the smaller breweries go away?
Yeah. Or buying out one or the other.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Sure.
Okay. So when they did that, and there were small breweries around, you know, the country, did they change the name to their own brand, or did they? Okay.
Originally they would do that. Now, there are a few legacy brewers that did survive, a handful of them, and still around today. Anchor out in California, San Francisco, okay. Anchor Steam, they've always been independent. There's one in upstate New York called Genesee. That's always been independent. Okay. Shiner down in Texas, they remained independent. They're part of a consortium now, but they survived through the great consolidation. Here locally, closer to hand, Shell's Brewery in New Ulm, they've always remained independent.
Okay.
And in fact, Shell's is a real interesting story because they maintain their beer identity, but they also have since that time gotten very much into craft brewing. And as of recently, a lot of people don't realize this, they are also the owners of Grain Belt.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So Grain Belt is now brewed at the Shell Brewery.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, the like you said, craft beer is getting more and more popular now. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think what happened was there were a lot of people probably like me, only, you know, who were talented in the line of being able to brew. I mean, I don't have the temperament to babysit brewing. But, you know, these people just got into it and thought, you know, we can do this. And then entrepreneurs got involved. And so it just kind of became a phenomenon. You know, they would see, well, you know, we've got a unique little product here. Nobody's doing anything quite like the earliest brewer, craft brewer in Colorado was Boulder Brewing. And they started in 1979.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, you got a bunch of, you know, young people who had experience, you know. And I think there's some of it also is our own culture, traveling culture, okay. You know, like, so people who'd been to Europe come back here and say, boy, you know, the beer in Europe isn't exactly like Bud Light. You know, how do we do that? You know, and so people met that need. And here locally for us, the two brothers who actually brought craft brewing back into Winona were Chris and Jeff Gardner. And their father, Paul Gardner, was the founder of the Westgate Bowling Alley. And they have Wellington's, which is their restaurant and bar. And that is where the boys, Chris and Jeff, started doing what they called backwater brewing. And they did that in Wellington's as a brew pub. So basically, they weren't a brewery. At that point, they weren't a brewery. They were a brew pub, brewing for their own facility. But later, well, Jeff passed away very young in 2007. And a couple years later, Chris and some other partners finally started thinking, okay, well, maybe we can do a regular little brewery on our own. And they formed Winona Brewing, which was out in Goodview. Okay. And it was actually opened in 2013. Problem they had there was they leased the space. They couldn't buy it. So they couldn't expand very much. And all the partners had other jobs. So for these guys, it was a labor of love. And what they did as Winona Brewing, they kept, there were two flagship beers at Wellington's. One was the Rivertown Nut Brown, and the other was Cattail Pale Ale.
Okay.
Well, when Winona kept, when they were actively brewing, they were supplying Wellington's with those two flagship beers. And then they just decided in 2017, they didn't want to, it was too much hassle. They couldn't expand. So they just finally closed down. And two of the partners actually are from Stewartville, and they actually took the brewing equipment with them to Stewartville. And they are in the process of establishing a brew pub there.
Cool.
With that same equipment.
Nice. So
equipment, and this is kind of deep in the woods, beer nerdy.
Okay.
But there's a major craft beer in Kalamazoo, Michigan, called Bell's. And when Bell's did a major upgrade, that's Chris and Jeff bought their equipment and brought it from Michigan down to Wellington's, and then that equipment went to Winona. And now that equipment is in Stewartville. So this is a craft beer trail here of equipment. It's pretty cool.
Cool. And you mentioned Wellington's being a brew pub. What is the actual difference between a brew pub and a brewery?
Okay, a brew pub basically does brewing for on-site use.
Okay.
So as an example, if you go up to Reed's Landing, there's a Reed's Landing bar and grill there, and they brew in the basement, so they're brewing their own beer on site, but not going out with it. I mean, you can take a growler of it with you, but they're not doing off-site sale. They're not putting it in the other bars. It's just for, and so they can brew in a lot smaller batches.
Right. Okay.
Is essentially how it works.
Okay. Cool. Do you think that we'll see any of those old brands revived in town? You know, anything, you know, other than Boops, you know, or
actually I kind of doubt it, but what's happened is some of the other big beers that went out of business, their trademarks and logos have been revived.
Oh, really?
By different people. Yeah. Pabst went under, Schlitz went under, and they're all part of a different conglomerate that owns those. They don't brew, you know, Pabst doesn't brew in Milwaukee anymore or anything like that. But they still are labels that are being brought online. Locally, I don't think there's, you know, I mean, the Boops in town here, well, this is actually kind of a nice full circle story. They are right now having on their one of their taps is the Pool 6 Pilsner.
Oh.
So they have after a fashion, by way of Island City, they actually have close to Boops on
the closest you can get to the original Boops, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, that's pretty cool. So
yeah.
And of course, right now, obviously Island City is a going concern, but in addition, there's another one that we like to let people know about, and that's a one-person operation. His name is Joe Pond, and he does what's known as farmhouse-style brewing. And farmhouse means you use as much homegrown or locally sourced ingredients as possible. And what Joe does, his wife's family had a farm in Rolling Stone. And so what he does is he brews in Rolling Stone in very small batches. He does like 100-150 barrels a year. But then he cans and bottles those, and they're for sale like Hy-Vee.
Really?
Yeah, it's called Olvalde, and that's spelled Olvalde.
Okay.
And Joe is very much into the craft and the culture of beer brewing. And Olvalde in Norse mythology was the emperor of ales. That's the way he named his.
Yeah. Cool.
And he does a lot of really high quality, very, very textured brewing, and as I say, limited quantity, but great quality. Yeah, for sure. Island City's doing real good work too, and you're seeing them turn up in more and more establishments, and they're actually talking about maybe working out a canning operation with another brewery.
Cool.
Right now, they do what are known as crowlers. So those are those 750 milliliter big cans.
Right.
They're like as we have on display here,
okay.
as well as growlers. And
right.
and they're showing up for sale as well in stores. So you can pick up a crowler of their stuff, which is all it is it's tap beer that's canned and kept cold.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So hopefully we'll see more of them around then.
I'm sure hoping that. They're doing good work.
Island City. I love it. And how long does this exhibit at the History Center last?
We're going to run till middle of January.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, we went up August 16th, and we'll be up till January 20th.
Okay, cool. So there's plenty of time to get down here and see this. It's some fantastic stuff.
Yeah, we're pretty proud of it. I have to confess. Yeah.
Cool. And you should be. Well, I've been here with Scott Simpson, and he's a volunteer down at the History Center, and he works on several exhibits, but the one in particular we're talking about today is the Brewing Up the Past. And it's a fantastic thing. So get down here and see it. It runs through January, you said?
Yep. January 20th of 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for being on our show today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it a lot.
Thanks again to Scott Simpson, Winona History Center volunteer, for joining us today on Culture Click. The Brewing Up the Past exhibit at the Winona History Center runs through January 20th of 2019. For more information about the exhibit, go to winonahistory.org. I'm Bill Stoneberg, and we've been talking to Scott Simpson on Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.